Greatest audience in the country. Welcome to Bob and Yurt Live. I'm the pastor of Denver Bible Church. We have been airing excerpts of the Will Duffy, Matt Slick Great Debate, Calvinism versus Open Theism. And in a couple minutes, I'm going to play a question that Matt Slick threw to Will Duffy in the second debate on Calvinism. And when Will answered it, he answered it just like Matt Slick responds to hundreds of verses. And the audience burst out in laughter. In fact, Matt Slick even smiled because he recognized the irony of Will's answer. But first, a few news items. What do we have? We have the way women are being treated better in the workplace, thanks to Harvey Weinstein. We have UFO sightings way down. And if you recall, this is related to a prediction we've made on Real Science Radio. And also, in Baltimore, the record high murder rate. It is just horrific what's happening in Baltimore. When there is a war on cops, just like we've seen a war on babies, a war on marriage, a war on phonics even, a war on gender, a war on creation, right? A war on God. All these things have consequences. The police, they do not operate in many of our cities the way normally a police force would operate. They go to work, and it's as though they're going into a war zone. And the rules of engagement need to recognize that. So as a result, we have a complete breakdown of the family in many of our cities, and we have children growing up without a dad in a home to respect or to teach them to respect themselves. And so there tends to be a loathing self-hatred. And this, of course, is expressed toward the culture and toward the rule of law. And so police go to work and they take their lives in their hands unnecessarily because we have such a crime epidemic. And so in Baltimore, there are people angry that the murder rate is so high, 343 killings in 2017. It works out to one person murdered for every 1,800 people in the city. If you have a church of 1,800 people, then every year one person in the church gets murdered if you're in Baltimore. And so we have extreme recklessness. We have suicide by cop. We have drugs, especially marijuana. Freddie Gray, if you recall, which it's his death that sparked all this. He is a pot dealer, lifelong pothead. And on our website, rsr.org/pot, we have all the scientific research showing the incredible danger that smoking marijuana brings. But also, we see that so many of the high-profile murders and terrorist attacks were committed, revolved around people who were potheads. So you might want to look at that, especially now that more states have decriminalized marijuana. We've got California, which was already morally, socially, and intellectually bankrupt. And now they're going to see an epidemic increase in smoking pot, including among children. So California, it's almost as though you can write off the entire state. All right, UFOs. We made a prediction a few years ago on Real Science Radio that with the ubiquity of cell phones that have video cameras, that this is going to affect UFO reporting, claims of spotting UFO spaceships, claims of alien abductions. And back in February of 2017, we called this prediction partially confirmed because while the number of UFO sightings stayed high, and a sighting of a UFO is not necessarily someone claiming to see a spaceship, it's just a light up in the sky, and if you don't know what it is, it's considered a UFO. At any rate, we reported in February that even though the number of claimed sightings stayed high, the percentage that claimed they saw some kind of an alien spacecraft was on the downturn. It had averaged 50% of all such sightings over decades, and it was now down to less than 25%. So now there's another partial confirmation of our prediction. The number of sightings is down by 1,000 from 2016 to 2017. This is according to the National UFO Reporting Center. So this is so fascinating because of about 5,600 reports of somebody saying, I saw a UFO in 2016, it's down to around 4,600 in 2017. That's down by 1,000. In California alone last year, they had about 500 reports. So imagine the total number of California, double that, and that's how much the claimed sightings are down in just 1 year. So for a long time, people got away with saying, well, my wife and I were headed to the farm and we saw the spacecraft and it went ahead of us on the road and it hovered over the road for 5 minutes, then it took off. But now people are going to say, well, why didn't you videotape it? Why didn't you photograph it? Why do we have just grainy images and radar images? Why don't we have actual clear video like we have from a week ago when SpaceX shot up a spaceship, a rocket, and it went over Los Angeles and hundreds of people got fabulous video of it. It was unidentified. They didn't know what it was. And then we found out what it was. So anyway, that prediction stands. And then also we're thankful that men who, regardless of the fact that they may remain pigs and dogs, that men are beginning to treat women better in the workplace and elsewhere. And that is a consequence since the Hollywood sexual harassment scandal broke, women are being treated better. And so are men in some context, but mostly women. This is the most significant moral uprising in America in almost 30 years since the rescue movement. In almost 30 years, the most significant moral uprising. And I'm sad to say that many Christian leaders are trying to undermine it because they want to protect their guy. So many conservatives who would talk about Juanita Broderick and Kathleen Willey and Paula Jones and all the women who were sexually harassed and assaulted by Bill Clinton, you'll find out that those women, their stories will not be referenced as frequently because conservative Christians have a very hard time separating their partisan politics from the moral issues that God cares a lot about in the Bible. Okay, now let's go to the debate. Will Duffy versus Matt Slick. Matt is the founder of CARM, CARM.org. And Matt is a popular Calvinist theologian. The second debate, December 2nd, 2017, was titled, Does Calvinism Present God as Good and Loving? So in the Gospels, Jesus speaks in parables, and when his disciples asked him, why are you doing that? He gave an answer that's surprising to many. He said, so that people won't understand, you know, so they won't believe, so they won't be forgiven. And why would Jesus answer like that? Well, when Matt Slick asked this of Will, Will responded, we'll let you hear this. It was the funniest moment of the debate during a very serious topic when Will answered the way Calvinists respond to hundreds of Bible verses. When they say they're figures of speech and we ask, well, what does it mean? And they say, it has no meaning. It's just a figure of speech. So when the audience laughed, then Matt Slick also chuckled. So let's see this, and then we'll talk about what Jesus meant when he said, I'm speaking in parables so that people will not understand.
Does Jesus here speak in parables so people won't be saved?
He speaks in parables so that...
Does he speak in parables so people will not be saved?
It's a figure of speech, and I don't know what it means.
Ha 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 Okay, so now we're going to talk about this on Sunday at Denver Bible Church. This was the topic of the sermon. And we made four observations. Will Duffy and I have been talking about this in the month since the debate. And there are four fascinating observations about why Jesus would say, I'm talking in parables so that people will not understand. And the first observation is that obviously whatever goal the Lord had in that was short-term and not long-term. Well, how so? Because he then interpreted the parables and he had the interpretation put in the Bible so that unbelievers could hear exactly what this parable of the sower, the one where the apostles asked Jesus, why are you speaking in parables? And he said, so that people won't understand. And then he interprets the parable, he explains it clearly, and then that goes in the Bible. So if you think about that, if there was a goal for people to misunderstand, if there was some kind of misdirection in the parables, it was a short-term and not a long-term misdirection, because otherwise, why put it in the Bible? During World War II, we had Navajo code talkers. There was no way that the Japanese military could understand the Navajo. So what if after they sent a transmission in their native tongue, what if we then sent it in plain text, plain language, so that the Japanese could understand it? Wouldn't that be absurd? So there's something going on here that does not fit in with the Calvinist assumption of what this means. The second observation is that Calvinism would be disproved if Jesus spoke in parables so that those who were not elect could not believe, right? That would disprove Calvinism because of their doctrines of total depravity and election, that there's no way they claim that someone who's not elect could possibly believe. They cannot believe. They can't get saved. And with irresistible grace, their other false doctrine, there's no way that someone who is elect can do anything other than get saved. So Calvinism itself would be disproved if Jesus spoke in parables so that those who were not elect would not believe. Our third observation is that elsewhere and frequently, Jesus spoke directly and plainly, giving people the information that they would need to believe. So if Jesus spoke in parables, really so that the unelect could not understand and could not believe, then why elsewhere would he speak so plainly? And then there is a fourth observation, and the fourth being this, that Jesus did many things to hold back. For example, they asked him, by what authority is he speaking? And he didn't answer the question. When he healed people repeatedly, in many instances in the Gospels, he told them, don't tell anyone. When demons were cast out, remember they said, you are the Christ, the Son of the living God, and he commanded them not to tell anyone. Then even when Peter said, you are the Christ, the Son of the living God, Jesus said, blessed are you, Simon Bar-Jonah. Flesh and blood has not revealed this to you, but my Father in heaven. And he said, tell no one. Don't tell anyone. Then when he told his disciples that he would be crucified and be raised from the dead, he would say, don't tell anyone, tell no one. Now, why is this? What was going on? There is a story arc in the Gospels. We teach the Bible from the perspective of its overview. We call it the plot. The plot of the Bible is the key to its details. In fact, My Life's Work is a book called The Plot that we sell on our store. You just go to kgov.com. Click on the store, and you'll see the plot. Or you can call us 1-800-8-NYARDS, and you can order a copy of the plot. Or we have the same thing in audio teaching, where we teach through huge swaths of the Bible based on the perspective of the overview of the Scriptures. So part of the Gospels, part of the story arc, it's a theme that runs through the four Gospels that you cannot get unless you're an open theist, unless you realize that the future is open. Part of that story arc is that Jesus is walking a narrow road, brilliantly, a narrow path, where he is doing his best to get his teachings out widely, but he's also thwarting his opposition so they don't gang up together against him. He is avoiding a premature conflict with Rome, with the Roman governor Pontius Pilate. He's avoiding a premature conflict with the Sanhedrin and with the high priest Caiaphas. You see, if Jesus went around for 3 years saying, I am going to be crucified and be raised from the dead, because God is free, he made us in his image and we are free. And so those in opposition to Jesus Christ could have said, well, this man has been saying that we're going to crucify him. That's the last thing we're going to do. We might arrest him. We might exile him to Patmos. We might put him to death a different way. We might keep him in prison. We might just ignore him. But we're not going to do what he's calling upon us to do. So that would be the expected response of the opponents of the Lord if, in fact, he did not use wisdom. If he did not hold back explaining explicitly what it was that he had come to do. That is why, in many different ways, he said, don't tell anyone, they're not going to understand this, I won't tell you by what authority I am speaking, do not tell others that I have healed you, don't tell anyone that I'm going to be crucified and be raised from the dead. Do you realize that without an open theist perspective, without recognizing that the future is free because God is free, and therefore also he made us free in his image and his likeness, that is why in the Gospels we have these extraordinary statements by Jesus, these statements and actions. His apostles went up to Jerusalem for the Feast of Tabernacles, and we're told that he went up secretly. He had two conflicting missions that he worked out in brilliance. The one was to widely disseminate his message, which ultimately was about himself. The other was to misdirect his opposition so that they would not interfere. Of course, God could have supernaturally intervened in the political operations of the day and thwarted Pontius Pilate, thwarted Herod, thwarted Caiaphas and his father-in-law Annas, thwarted the Sanhedrin, and God could have done all of that supernaturally so that the nation could see that the political leaders are trying to arrest him, but their soldiers are being destroyed. The earth is opening up and they're being sucked down alive into hell. There are so many ways that God could have supernaturally intervened, but his goal, after he had woven through the Old Testament, the Hebrew scriptures, the prophecy of Christ's first coming and his sacrifice of his life for us and his resurrection, but so much of that is presented subtly so that it becomes obvious after the fact, because if it was obvious before the fact, you would have people who hated God and trying to resist those very efforts to bring about our salvation in a way that God did not want to respond to. And so Jesus is constantly spreading widely his message while foiling and confusing his enemies. That is the only plausible explanation of why Jesus would say, don't tell anyone that I'm going to be crucified. Don't tell anyone I'm going to be raised from the dead. Because if the goal was, make sure that those who are unelect cannot believe, cannot understand, if that was the goal, then why put it in the Bible? If Jesus spoke in parables so that the unelect could not understand, then he only spoke in person to hundreds of people, whereas the Bible now for 2,000 years, and especially with the printing press, has been read by hundreds of millions of people. So why be explicit and say, here's exactly what's going on, if the goal is to prevent those who are unbelievers from understanding? That third observation was that if Jesus was speaking in parables so that people could not believe, then why so frequently did he speak explicitly, plainly, and directly? I'll give you a few examples. In John chapter 8, Jesus said, I am from above, You are of this world. He's speaking in public to the Pharisees. I am not of this world. Therefore, I said to you that you will die in your sins, for if you do not believe that I am he, you will die in your sins. That's explicit. There's not much parable in there. Six chapters later in John chapter 14, he said, let not your heart be troubled. You believe in God, believe also in me. For Jesus then said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. So there's no secret wording there. Jesus said that in Judas' hearing. Why be so explicit if he had to speak in parables so that unbelievers couldn't understand? Wouldn't this kind of clear talk risk ruining everything? How about John 3:16? That's flat out in the Bible. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whoever believes in him should not perish, but have everlasting life. Why put that in the Bible if Jesus' purpose was to speak in code so that those who were not chosen could not believe? There are so many examples of this in the Gospels, and there are so many examples of this elsewhere in the Bible where it is explicit. In fact, Jesus went about all Galilee, teaching in their synagogues, preaching the gospel of the kingdom. And of course, in the synagogues, some who attended the synagogues were hard-hearted. Why would he tell his disciples to go out and preach the gospel? Why would he do that? Once he sent out the 12 apostles. Another time he sent out 70 of his followers. And we read explicitly, for example, in Luke chapter 9, that Jesus called his 12 disciples together and he sent them to preach. So they departed and went through the towns preaching the gospel. That's explicit. That's not code. Luke quotes Jesus saying, the Spirit of the Lord is upon me because he has anointed me to preach the gospel. Remember in Matthew 24, Jesus said that the gospel of the kingdom will be preached in all the world as a witness to all the nations? So which is it, you could ask someone who's misunderstanding the reason that Jesus spoke in parables? Which is it? Did he have to speak in parables so that those who are not elect could not understand? Or, in fact, did he frequently speak explicitly and fill the Bible with straight talk on what you must do to be saved? So these four observations. The first is that the code talk aspect of the parables was not long-term, but it was short-term. We know that. How do we know that? Because take Matthew 13. Jesus gives the parable of the sower, and then his disciples ask him, Lord, why are you speaking in parables? And he says, so that they will not understand. And then he spends about five verses explaining it, interpreting it. So how could it be that the goal was that they would not understand the meaning of the parable if he then interprets the parable? Do you see the confusion that Calvinism and other settled view doctrines get you into? Because God put in the Bible the interpretation of the parable, and the Bible would be read by hundreds of millions, including countless people who never turned to the Lord. So there it is in black and white explicitly, but we have our Calvinist brothers and sisters who think ultimately that Jesus was speaking in parables because there are many people whom he did not want to believe and have salvation. So that concept, when somebody first gets that idea, right, it may occur to them immediately upon reading the text. But God asks us to take his word seriously, to study it carefully. It would be like someone reading where Jesus said, if you're going to follow me, you have to hate your mother and father, sister and brother. And they read that like some cult, like let's say Scientologists, where they get so many of their members to cut off their family permanently, never again see your mother and father. And so a verse like that might become one of their favorite passages, might become a proof text for them, not because they want to understand what it means, but because they think it's helpful for them. They twist it out of context and they misuse it. So there's a Hebrew idiom of love and hate, and it's a comparison. It means to love and to love more. So our love for God is to be so intense, so complete, that our love for anyone else, in comparison, it's almost like hate. But does God want you to hate your parents? No, of course not. He says, love your neighbor, love your family, love your enemy even, love yourself. So it's so easy to take, like, for example, that happened in this debate where Will Duffy asked Matt Slick as a Calvinist, so do you think God hates babies in the womb? Do you think that God hated baby Esau in the womb? And Matt Slick said yes. You see what happens when these kind of verses become your odd favorite passages? That Jesus said you have to hate your mother and father? That God doesn't want people to believe in him? That God hates babies? It is so very easy when you're looking for proof text to settle for something superficial when a careful consideration of the passage in context helps you understand what it means. We have a seminar titled Hermeneutics, the Tools for Understanding the Bible. You can see it. In fact, you can get an overview of it on our website, kgov.com/hermeneutics. The second and third hermeneutics are the nature of God and the story of the Bible. So the nature of God, that he is living, personal, relational, good, and loving, the Bible tells us these things many hundreds of times. So when you see that God is good and loving, and then it says that you have to hate your mother and father, you could think, well, if that's really what that meant, then that would go against God's nature. So the hermeneutic of interpreting the Bible based on God's nature, that suggests there's a different meaning. And lo and behold, the true meaning is not very hard to find once you realize this. The third hermeneutic is the story of the Bible, the context, not only of the chapter in the book, but that part of the Bible and the entire Bible. So if people are being taught that the bottom line reason why Jesus spoke in parables was so that unbelievers or the unelect could not understand, then why would Jesus then put the interpretation right into the text? And why would the Bible be filled with so many explicit statements, like in Romans chapter 10, in Ephesians chapter 2, and so many passages that are explicit, here's what you must do to be saved? Why would that be? If God had this goal of speaking in code so that those who were not chosen could not understand, so they could not be forgiven, so they could not believe. So that was the sermon at Denver Bible Church on Sunday. And it was so enjoyable to talk with Will Duffy over the last month about aspects of the debate that, in the fast-moving context of a somewhat confrontational debate, it's hard to say, well, now give me 20 minutes and let me understand this story arc in the Gospels, this theme whereby Jesus is constantly misdirecting his opposition in order to avoid a premature conflict with Rome and a premature conflict with the high priest. That's what Jesus Christ was doing in so many ways. And that only makes sense if the future is open, if God is free, and if he made us in his image, in his likeness, to be free also, because we have a will. Hey, we're out of time. Till tomorrow, may God bless you.